Welcome to the Hardware Asylum Podcast. In this episode, we talk about the lack of enthusiast-level RTX 30 series video cards and our overclocking adventures using an SFX power supply. I'm your host, Dennis Garcia, and with me today, I have Darren McCain. It's been a very busy month here at Hardware Asylum, which is a little strange, given that it is December.
It is. December is generally a slow period for hardware in general, but especially enthusiast-level hardware.
Well, and there's just not a lot of new things coming out. Well, I say that, and then all of a sudden we have like an RTX 3060 Ti that hit the market just a couple of days ago and a bunch of games. But typically, this is the Christmas season when people buy things, not wait for new things to come out and not be able to buy them.
Right. And then, interestingly enough, I think they plan around that to kind of blow out all the old hardware that's sitting on the shelves so they can bring the new hardware out in the spring. But maybe it's just me. But yeah. I digress. What is keeping you busy? What made this an especially busy month?
Well, on December 6th, I was a guest on the Funky Kit Show, which is a live stream hosted by Winston Chim. He is the editor-in-chief of Funky Kit.
Okay, well, Winston sounds sort of familiar to me. How is that a familiar name?
Well, we have both been editors of our respective sites for many, many years.
Right.
He knew me back when I was running Ninja Lane.
Well, that's a bit of history.
But actually, a lot of people know me from running Ninja Lane. So maybe that's not the best way.
You cannot escape the past, Dennis.
I cannot. He invited me onto his show, and we basically talked a little bit about history, a little bit about, hey, what's new on my site? What's new on your site? He has a great new feature on his site called Rig Builder.
Oh, interesting.
And this is kind of fun because you can go and say, I want to pick an Intel system to build with an AMD GPU, and it will go and search Amazon for various products that will come together and create a build.
That sounds pretty slick. Can you order it directly through the builder too?
Yeah, because it's
it's an Amazon shopping cart, right?
It's an Amazon shopping cart. And it really, it takes advantage of the Amazon shopping API, which is kind of where you can go and say, I want to pick an Intel processor that's less than $300. The API will allow you to search the store for an Intel CPU that's less than $300. And it will pull back whatever results in whatever stores and give you the options that you can choose from.
Very interesting.
So that way you can kind of put something together. It's really not going to be a PC parts picker sort of situation, but it'll be more of a, I want to go to this tech store, which is Amazon, and put together a rig.
I know a lot of folks like to, maybe even prefer to shop from Amazon because of the ease of it and the safety involved. Although Newegg's gotten a lot better.
Yeah, well, at least here in the U.S.
True.
Some of the other items, we went over the mods of the week, and he has a, I think it's on Facebook, but there's a group where you can go and post your mod, and he goes and picks a couple of builds off of that and talks about them on his live stream.
Well, that's pretty cool. I know that mods lately, at least, have seemed to be a little more in the background unless they're themed after, you know, the lightest hot game, like all the Cyberpunk builds we seem to be seeing this week.
Yeah, well, builds are, they're not as cherished as they used to be when we were doing builds back in the day. People are really scrutinizing, making sure cable management is perfect, making sure that the tubes are run perfectly. One of the builds that came up, the guy did some hardline, and he ran it up and under the memory so that you could see the memory lights as the tubes went into the CPU block. And that's something that, you know, like when we put together the Vue 31 build, we just ran the tube straight across. We didn't try to snake it around some of the components so you could see them. And that was kind of an interesting, innovative idea.
Well, definitely a lot of extra work involved in that sort of thing, which I think we appreciate a lot. But mods are less popular these days because you can buy a lot of stuff that's essentially pre-modded.
Well, and that's a good point. Some of the builds we put together for Boise LAN and Hackfort, one of them was totally custom, which was your machine, custom painted, custom build, DIY, everything. And then the one I put together was completely off the shelf. They looked the same from the outside, but, you know, to the trained eye, you can tell the difference. And that's what's great about some of these sites that allow you to post your build and allow you to scrutinize them. Some of the other items that we talked about was a rumor about the RTX 3080 Ti. And he asked me my thoughts on this particular card.
I think a 3080 Ti is inevitable, really, but what did you come up with?
Basically that. I mean, NVIDIA has always released a Tie or a Super Edition, which is the second release of a chip. And that goes all the way back to like the GeForce 2 days.
Wow, that is a long time ago. I don't think I remember the Ties being that old. I think my first Tie was a 650 Tie, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, and I had a 2 series. I had an Ultra, and then I had something in the 4 series that was a Tie. And it was always the best version to buy was the Tie edition. And just recently, NVIDIA has released the RTX 3060 Tie. They kind of bypassed the 3060, I guess, having it faster than the 2080 Super is not good enough or something?
Apparently. Well, and it's interesting too, because now we have Supers in the mix, but the new Tie, the 3060 Tie, is a much lower end processor. So I'm really kind of surprised that they're making them that small, although the performance isn't that small.
No, it's not. As I mentioned before, they claim it to be faster than 2080 Super, but they also said that with the 3070 and the 3080. So it depends on how you configure your game and your basic system specs. I mean, your base system still is a big component in overall performance of your GPU.
So now this little 3060 Tie, is it limited like the last couple generations? No SLI support, single card, only a little factory type air cooling? I mean, what are we doing with these things? Are we keeping the price down?
Yeah, they're keeping the price down. EVGA has released 2 versions of the 3060 Ti. One of them is a single fan. It's really super dinky small. It'll fit basically in your back pocket. And then they have a 2-fan edition, but it's basically the same GPU. It's kind of like the KO in the 20 series.
Okay.
And of course, the target market is the low-end PC gamer. Although at $400, isn't that what you paid for your 60 that you have now?
Yeah, well, pretty close, actually. I feel like we should redefine what we say an entry-level card is when we're talking about a card that outperforms a 2080 Super. Well, at least in theory.
That is a good point, because you're not going to be able to build a machine for $500 if you have a 30 series card anywhere.
Well, not at all. And it probably is overkill for folks that would normally be buying an entry-level card. Mm-hmm. However, the low prices is certainly intriguing.
Some of the other items that we talked about on the live stream were the RTX 3080 Ti, and I thought that maybe we could just go ahead and roll into my thoughts on what I think the 3080 could, should, and needs to be.
Well, I have to say, I'm not actually sure the 3080 Ti exists, because you can't buy one.
No, you cannot. And actually, on the live stream, it was more or less a rumor. I think videocards.com leaked it, and somebody saw it in a driver somewhere. So that is likely what the name is going to be from NVIDIA, and I'm not sure when it's going to get released. So as enthusiasts, we look at performance video cards, and we talked about this in a previous podcast where the RTX 3090 is really the performance king. But in NVIDIA world, the 3090 is really the titan, and this is the card that you're not actually supposed to buy as a retail consumer. But EVGA is taking the opportunity to take this fully huge chip and make it a kingpin edition. So that is the one that you can overclock with nickel nitrogen. You can unlock the VRMs. You can power as much as you want into it. And it comes with its own AIO water block.
Dennis, I'm a little confused, because you just said that this is the Titan, basically the card that we shouldn't be buying. But if this is where all of the overclocking focus is, then shouldn't we be looking for a 3080 Ti Kingpin Edition or 3080 Ti Lightning or something we should be buying? How does that work?
Well, and that's where there's a bit of confusion in the market, because Jensen changed the Titan to the 3090, and all of a sudden that puts it into the retail space from a marketing standpoint. If you wanted to buy a 3080 or a 3070, which is the retail cards, there isn't anything available that is overclocker friendly, so to speak.
Okay, now I gotta ask a question. So overclocker friendly, I mean, these are great cards and they do overclock, right? The 60s and 70s?
You can get a little bit out of them, but as we mentioned before, GPU boost goes and basically maxes out the card. So we are looking for a card that allows you to tweak the voltages and be able to push the clocks past what NVIDIA already has configured. And you can do hardware mods. Stepanzi has modified a 3080 at one point and was able to tweak the power phases to put it on liquid nitrogen, but he was in the card itself and actually soldering and modifying the VRM to make that work. The landscape has really become, you buy these performance cars that are hot clocked, and the manufacturers will go and reaffirm that these are special video cards with these large VRMs, but they don't allow you to modify the VRM. So at that point, well, why didn't you just buy a Founders Edition card that has a standard cooler and a standard VRM, because it's giving you the exact same performance?
Well, it's cheaper for the most part. Yeah. I get that, but is it a limitation of the hardware or the software or both?
It's a limitation of the hardware from the manufacturer. So obviously EVGA can create a Kingpin Edition 3090, which has this super large VRM that you can overclock. And then they release the For the Win 3080s that have a much larger VRM, not to the Kingpin Edition, obviously, but the VRM is locked so that you can't change voltages. You can't actually change clock speeds past the boost level. And this creates a huge barrier of entry for overclockers. We have the factory supported overclocking, which is arguably the easiest and can be warranted to a certain degree. And then we have the modders that can get in there and actually modify the hardware and tweak the VRMs or slice them off completely and add a new one. And that's really not something that somebody that is trying to get into overclocking or is really curious about it will be able to do.
Yeah, that's definitely a high risk, deep pockets thing, which isn't really that much different from being factory sponsored. You got to have a lot of time and a lot of money to experiment with these things.
Yeah, and that's where I think with the 3080 Ti, we need to start seeing some retail versions of overclocking cards again. And maybe it is the card is unlocked, but from the factory, it comes with a BIOS that isn't unlocked. So then you go and subscribe to get this BIOS so that you can go and apply it to your card. Something like that. I mean, back in the day, MSI had a special version of Afterburner that you could run on their Lightning cards, and it would unlock certain voltages and certain frequencies so that you could overclock these cards under liquid nitrogen. And that was how they kept those cards within spec for retail users or regular gamers, and then also for the enthusiast overclockers.
Well, I think that appeals to me as more of a casual overclocker these days, especially with the dual or multiple BIOS cards. You could have a stable BIOS always in your back pocket and then a fancy overclocked BIOS. I don't see why that's not possible. Is it just to create this unicorn effect for these super high-end cards?
I think it could be. I mean, we have the Hall of Fame cards and the Kingpin cards, and really those are the only companies that are making these unicorn overclockers. MSI's kind of gotten out of it. Gigabyte has gotten out of it. And I think they're scared. NVIDIA has kind of whipped them into shape saying, you know, you will sell our product the way that we want you to sell it. And they're not going to budge.
Well, hopefully we'll see some more aftermarket options that we can use to tweak these cards from at least the overclocker standpoint. Mm-hmm. But in the short run, I guess the unicorn effect means that we should be grateful that the costs have come down on these high-end cards. And cards like the 3060 Ti are out and driving the budget down. The competition from AMD, which we didn't even talk about, is keeping prices low. It really is a pretty great time for high-end hardware if you're not an overclocker.
And assuming you can buy it.
Dennis, livecasting can't be the only thing that's keeping you busy during this cold weather, because cold weather is good for competitive overclocking.
That is true. And in November, like after the Thanksgiving holiday, I was trying to get some cups using my RTX 2080 Super.
So now a cup is a World Cup, for the folks out there that don't follow the competitive overclocking, the pinnacle, if you will, of speed overclocking on a specific hardware build.
Oh, you're over embellishing here. The cup is really, it can be a world record, which can be the fastest score in a benchmark, or it can be a hardware first place, which is basically the fastest score posted for that particular hardware.
Well, most of the news goes to the world records, but down in the trenches, you can get your points using specific hardware combinations. And I know, because you sent a pretty cool picture, that you used a new hardware setup.
Well, I was testing out a couple of things. One was the EVGA Z490 Dark Edition motherboard.
Beautiful motherboard.
I just got that one in, and it is amazing. Although, it's really kind of identical to the Z390. And we talked about that in a previous podcast, which I will link in the show notes.
Go check it out.
But I wanted to test a new power supply, which we can talk about a little bit later. And I thought, well, what is the best way I can stress a power supply?
Watching The Mandalorian?
Yeah, that would actually work. Or maybe playing some cyberpunk.
Woohoo!
But no, in this case, I thought, well, I'm just going to run Firestrike, overclocking a video card, overclocking a CPU, which is really the ultimate stress test for an 850-watt power supply, which was kind of fun. But I was able to get a gold cup in Firestrike Extreme.
So let's walk us through it. What was the hardware build? Let's get that out of the way.
Well, we had the Z490 EVGA Dark Edition motherboard.
Of course.
We are running a Core i9-10900K.
Nice.
And that was clocked. That was clocked with an AIO water cooler at 5.3 gigahertz.
Okay, so we're not talking about extreme overclocking with the phase or liquid nitrogen in this case.
Well, no, and I set out to, again, like I mentioned before, test a power supply. So I didn't want to break out the phase cooler just for this because that's kind of that's a long process, actually.
Okay, that makes sense.
I didn't set out to go and create a record either. That just kind of, it steamrolled, really.
All right, so let's finish up the build. You did memory. Mm-hmm. I'm assuming that hot new memory that we've been talking about.
Actually, no. I was using some 4133 G-skilled memory that I had overclocked to 4200 and then lowered the timings. It was running at a Cas 18. But I was able to increase the Uncore, which is the memory controller frequency, almost to 5 gigahertz. Video card-wise, I was able to overclock the 2080 Super to 1770 megahertz, although that's not the real core clock. The real clock speed was 2130 with 2312 on the memory.
Those are impressive scores also, but I know there's not a lot of room in those 2080s. So how did you get the cup?
Well, I had to do a number of things. One was to try and keep the card boosted. As we know, NVIDIA Boost works on two metrics, temperature and power consumption.
Right.
And if you can keep both of those below a limit, the card will run as fast as it possibly can. So when you're running benchmarks, the one metric that you look at besides just the final score is what did the system do to get you that score? So you can set your CPU overclock to 5.3 gigahertz, for instance, but throughout the benchmark, it may not be running at 5.3 all the time. So during certain CPU sections, it will actually downclock, and that decreases performance. And that's one reason that we get liquid nitrogen and water cooling involved with these kind of things. Well, it works the same way with video cards. To get 2130, I needed to have 2130 all the time to get the best score.
That makes sense.
Now, as I was running Firestrike Extreme, you would be able to see that, well, okay, it starts out to 2130 and then it drops down to 2250 and then 21 something. And that is related to temperature. And being that it's really effing cold in Idaho these days, I decided to go old school.
Okay, how so?
Well, I opened up all the windows. I closed the door to the Ninja Lane Hardware Stadium office.
Oh no.
And I got the box fan that we normally run in the lab when it's summertime and put that in front of the window.
To pull the cold air in. Oh, dropping the ambient temperature, of course.
Yep. And I even went so far as to start creating ways to get the air from the window to blow directly onto the two fans on the 2080 Super.
So how low did you get the ambient temperature, do you know?
It was close to freezing. I had my coat on, I had a sweater on, and yeah, nobody wanted to come into the office because it was freezing in there. And for good reason, I needed to lower the ambient temperature so that the card would actually boost longer. And that was one reason that I was able to get the score that I got.
And that's how you get that impressive 15268 in Firestrike Extreme. Impressive. But I want to talk about this power supply because now that I'm looking at it, I'm kind of impressed. And I didn't think I would be because you would think power supplies are kind of power supplies. The foundation of your build, we often say, mm-hmm. and not generally very glamorous. I mean, you can get LED lighting or maybe a white case. And, you know, but in general, it's just kind of the block that you have to have. But this one's kind of cool. So what am I looking at here? This is the Cooler Master V850 power supply. It's 80 plus gold rated, says the label. And for comparison here, let me just grab this this thermal take. And we might have to take a picture of this thing.
Oh, yes, of course.
So this is one of the power supplies that we normally have on the build. And you can review the or view the review, rather, for this one, too. This is the Tough Power DPSG 850, which is also an 80-plus gold-rated power supply.
Yeah. Well, and the special thing about this Thermaltake one is it was one of their first digital power supplies, and it had a piece of software that you could monitor how much power and temperature it was drawing.
Which is cool.
Yeah.
And it's pretty with the gold thing, although maybe a little gaudy.
It's a bit always gaudy. Terrible. It's
but
huge.
What's most impressive, and I think you're going to need a picture to see this, is the size of this V850, because it is tiny.
Yeah. It's an SFX power supply rated at 850 watts gold. And it has a full complement of power connectors.
I was just looking at that.
Now, while the Thermaltake is set up to do four-way SLI back in the day, you can do a very similar setup with this 850 from Cooler Master.
And it has removable cables, 100% removable cables.
Yeah, fully modular.
I'm just going to guess at the size here, but it's got to be roughly 4x5x2.5, maybe?
2.5 or 3. Yeah, it's small. SFX is a very compact form factor, and it's designed for small form factor machines. One of the Raven cases from Silverstone required an SFX power supply, but they were limited to about 450 watts, 500 watts, and you could have to get one of the larger sizes to get that larger power rating.
I can't get over the size. Is that could be an 80 millimeter fan on the top, and that's almost the entire surface area. I can't tell if it's an 80 or a 92 without grabbing another one.
I think it's an 80 millimeter fan. Oh, and speaking of the fan, and this is one thing I wanted to test when I was doing my overclocking, was when does the fan turn on? So a lot of traditional power supplies, the fan is on all the time. And in old builds, that was one of the primary exhaust out of your case was from the power supply. Well, with builds being quiet and silent, or the desire to have a quiet build, the power supply fan, having it on all the time, is really a problem area. Well, with this one, if the power supply is idle, the fan is off. And it doesn't matter how long it's running, it's off. I had this thing running for about 4 hours, just kind of sitting there. It never got hot to the touch.
That's impressive, because small form factor is frequently used in things like home theater PCs and micro workstations.
The fan itself turns on based off of load, though. So once I started my benchmark in Firestrike Extreme, the fan would turn on. But it never really spun to the point where it got loud. And the power supply never got hot to the touch either. It got to about 30 centigrade at the maximum. And that was after repeated runs of Firestrike.
I guess from a power standpoint, is this a single rail power supply? It seems like most are these days.
Let's look. If you look on the label, you can tell if it's a single or multi-rail. Oh, and this was right. A single rail.
So that's pretty nice. I know, though, that makes sense from the small size of it, so it doesn't have any additional little doodads in it.
Well, and really, there's a lot of power advantages to having a single rail power supply. That way, the power is distributed across all the ports evenly. With multi-rails, you need to sometimes combine them together to get the maximum power output for what it is that you're trying to do. And a special deal with the modular cables is that we have a number of 8-pin plugs there that you see across the top.
Oh, yeah.
Well, those are dual purpose. So some of them can be used for PCI Express power, and some of them can be used for CPU power. And in the case of my Z490, it required two CPU power plugs, so I could actually run that off the power supply. And the 2080 Super required two PCI Express power connectors. And I had to go out to the garage to actually grab the appropriate cable to run right. That.
Well, it's comforting that they're universal, but that tends to be the way things are across a single manufacturer, which is nice if you have extra hardware.
Well, and it also allows you to run your custom sleeved power cables, for instance, like what we put into your build.
Yep. Ordering the right cables for your build is definitely a nice plus if you can.
So the real question with SFX power supplies is what kind of build can you put them in? And it just kind of seems weird to have this full tower case with an SFX power supply.
It'll give you a lot of room, though.
It would give you a ton of room. But the cables that come with the power supply itself are generally shorter because they're designed for small form factor cases. Now, if you had a regular cable kit, obviously you can plug those into this power supply and you can run them in a much larger build. But from the factory, they really intend you to use them in a small form factor case, like kind of the NR200 that just came out and a number of other cases that are on the market. But I'm not sure if I would actually use a power supply like this in a tower case. So I might keep it in a small one.
Well, I have to say that the small size of it, especially compared to this Tough Power, makes me wonder about, you know, multiple power supply builds as a viable SLIing power supplies, maybe.
Oh,
or well, doing two micro builds in, say, a full tower.
Oh, yeah, two builds in a full tower. That has been done before, and that one of the advantages of that is for like streamers. So you can have one system running your stream and actually connecting to Twitch or YouTube or whatever, and then the other build can be your gaming build. So that way, if your game crashes or something wants to do an update, you're still online. A small power supply like this would work in a taller case for that reason.
Okay, well, let's talk about it from the overclocking standpoint. I know that we've recently upped our minimum voltage for a normal PC to an 850 minimum, where we had it at 600 for so long, it seems like.
650.
Is this Micro V850 able to run a full gaming enthusiast PC?
Based off of my score in Firestrike, yes. And I did a lot of other testing with this particular power supply beyond just overclocking. When I had the EVGA Dark on the test bench, I was also testing a monitor, a Viotech.
I was just thinking in my head, what difference does it make what monitor you're running to test a power supply? I had nowhere to go.
Okay, sorry. I was testing a Viotech monitor. This is a curved gaming 2K panel that they sent in. And the idea here was that I was just basically testing games. Well, I had the same 2080 Super running with this particular power supply. And in some games that weren't very demanding, the fan never turned on. In other games, like I was playing 7 Days to Die, for instance, that's not a particularly optimized game, but I was able to push almost 100 frames a second with that particular build running super high settings, and it started to stress the power supply. In terms of wattage, 850 powered that system just fine. I was able to do overclocking. I was able to do long gaming sessions with it. It never got warm, which is the telltale sign that the power supply is being overextended. So I would say 650 is still a good target. But if you look at some of the high-end cards like the 380s and the 390s and the new 6900 XT from Radeon, they are claiming you need to have at least a 700 watt. But if you are able to buy one of those, you might as well go with a 12 or 1500 anyway.
That makes sense. So from a viability standpoint, the V850 can hold its own for overclocking and for gaming and for small form factor. So is there anything it can't do well?
It cannot be a boat anchor.
It cannot be a boat anchor.
It's a little too small.
You're looking for limitations, you found them. So check out that overclocking run and the article on the V850 coming soon.
For more information on the topics discussed in this podcast, please consult our show notes at hardwareasylum.com. Stay up to date on the latest at Hardware Asylum by subscribing to our RSS. Follow us on Twitter or like us on Facebook. This has been an Engine Lane production, copyright 2020. Thanks for listening.